This is the Lunch Bite with Ian Bass.
Yeah, welcome back to this incredible show where we're talking everything about communication and media, and certainly an interesting time. And that song that Craig just played for us was Mr. Probst with Waves, and I'm sure a lot of people are making waves out there in the media. And the reason why I wanted to chat about this topic today and why I feel it's so important is because of the confidence factor and confidence in communication and what are we really feeling about what people say, whether it's your own business, whether it's our leaders. It's a very difficult time, and certainly the only way to really address this is to speak to somebody who understands this so well. And I'm delighted, as I mentioned a bit earlier, to have Janine Lazarus joining us on the line today. As you know, we're doing all our broadcasts from Skype, so over Skype and that, and I'm doing it from my home office, or what's become my home studio, or my COVID cave, as I'm calling it now. My man cave has been renamed to a COVID cave. And we're going to be talking to Janine about quite a few things. But first and foremost, as everyone knows, I don't use the usual repertoire about people's bios. I'll share that with you a little bit later. But some interesting facts that you may or may not know about Janine. So Janine has been in the industry for more than 36 years. So she's really experienced. But some of the most interesting things that Janine has done is Janine tells me, or I actually found some of the stuff out, but she did tell me most of it, that Janine dressed up in a black mini skirt and thigh-high boots. I had to pronounce that the whole day today. It's a tongue twister. On Oxford Road in Rosebank one late night for a Sunday newspaper story about prostitutes moving from the city into suburbia. And Janine is very proud and chuffed to say that 30 years later, she's proud that she was quite a draw card back then. Janine, we'll touch on a couple of the other ones later, but I want to welcome you. Good afternoon and welcome to the Lunch Part.
Hi, Ian. Thanks so much. It's so nice to speak to you in this format.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're delighted that you've made the time and you've taken the time to join us today. So Janine, as I mentioned, you bring more than 36 years of experience. You've been involved in mainstream print. You've also been involved in broadcast media. You've seen it from every angle. You've held senior positions, both nationally and internationally. And I guess the question I have to ask you is, have you ever experienced anything similar to what we're going through right now?
No, this is a bolt from the blue. This is, I feel like we're living through a zombie movie. And I feel that we're all trying to grapple with what that reality means on a sort of a global and an individual level.
Sure. And I think that's what everybody, I guess, feels. And that's why we go through these moments of feeling despair in a way. We're feeling that we're either not hearing enough, or we're hearing too much, or we're hearing, we don't really know what to do. And I guess you're in business as well. So you operate a training business as well, amongst other things, coaching and other things. For you personally and for your business, how has lockdown changed your business, and what have you done to adapt?
Well, Ian, I really was thrown into the deep end, and I've got to say thank you to an enormously big client of mine in the mining industry. I've done remote training from an executive coaching point of view, so I'm not unfamiliar with the virtual training space. But this was media training, and I'm an in-your-face, no-holds-barred, really tough cookie when it comes to in-person media training. This was now taking that offering and repurposing it for online. And I was asked by the mining group to gear up their brand new CEO to address all their employees on the Monday on managing COVID-19. So I had to, she's brand new. I had to get her in the driver's seat, and we recorded her on a Sunday night. And that was really the bell, if you like, the start off position for me. And I've been rolling out really intensive training, not just to that organization, but to most of my clients who've opted for the virtual training space.
Wow. So certainly a big change for you as well. And I heard a little bit earlier on one of the earlier shows with Howard Feldman, and he was chatting to Howard Saxton, and he was saying that for many people, you alluded to the point about being in your face and being very present in that. And I think that's a big challenge for a lot of business people and executives is that specifically for extroverts, people that like to be out there and like to be in contact, they're struggling. Whereas people that are typically more introverted and like to be out of the limelight, that this is quite conducive. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and in fact, that's the feedback I get certainly during the executive coaching sessions. My clients who are a little bit more reserved, a little bit less balderdash like me and kind of a bull in a china shop, they're comfortable in this space. I miss human connection. I miss the hugging. I miss the gentle touching, the straightening of somebody's shirt or tie. But interestingly enough, Ian, this remote space is at once quite isolating, but it's also quite cohesive because if you think about it, yesterday I trained a CEO of a healthcare provider. They run healthcare throughout Africa and into other countries. And the guy was chatting to me, the CEO from North Carolina in the US. And the week before that, I worked with somebody who was talking to me from the UK, from the beautiful Midlands with pheasants outside and fawn and all of these lovely things and rabbits and foxes. So yes, this is isolating, but at the same time, there is a kind of intimacy to this method of communication that we've never seen before.
Janine, we're going through your top three, as I call it. And the second one I have on my list is one I actually remember. I was very young at the time, but I do remember it. And it's such a fascinating story. But you were used by the police as bait to catch a serial killer. Now, this sounds so exciting, but at the same time, it must have been very scary for you. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience, please?
No, to the contrary, Ian. I mean, you know, you're talking to an old hack who kind of grew up in the smoke-filled, hot metal printing press newsrooms of the late 80s, early 90s. I'm a crime reporter through and through. It's in my DNA. So I don't get scared really easily. What I do get is I get high on adrenaline. So, and that basically is the crime memoir that I'm writing, which was my third point. Getting that close to a story is the first rule of what not to do as a journalist. You don't get involved in a story. But the killer, he was the Norwood serial killer. He was raping and killing girls within a 2.5 kilometer radius of my flat. I fit the profile of at least two of his victims. And the murder and robbery squad cops at the time, the notorious murder and robbery squad cops at the time, asked to use my flat and me as a decoy because I was within his killing zone. So, within his kill zone. So that's what the book is all about. And, of course, there's ethical questions that are raised. You know, should you as a journalist get that close to a story? Mm. Obviously not. Should the police use a journalist that way? Obviously not. And it was also set in such an interesting time, Ian, because it's 1992. We're moving into our first democracy. There are much bigger and much more important stories than a hack running after a serial killer. But it was intensely exciting. And frankly, I walked down the lonely Iris Road in the middle of the night trying to lure him out because we knew at that point, I knew off the record that he was a cop. But as I walked down the street, he never came out. He never showed his face. And I was very upset because I wanted him. I wanted the exclusive interview. In any event, that's what the book's about.
Wow. So that's something for all of our listeners to look forward to. And I've just got a message from Joan Bernard. Joan sends her regards. She says she loves you two bits. So the lovely message there from Joan Bernard. And I think Janine, you're going to become one of our famous authors and we're going to have to, I'm not going to ask you more about this story because I'll let the listeners wait in suspense for the story, but I certainly look forward to reading it. But Janine, picking up on that, on where media gets involved and where don't they, and journalists crossing the line. And like you say, it was a very different time in the early 90s to where we are now. We're living in this social media world where everybody is a journalist and everybody is an expert and everybody knows better than anybody else. And we've seen over the last, I would say, couple of weeks that people are putting across their own opinions, and then the media gets accused of not reporting and not doing this. In your point, everybody's affected by COVID-19. How do journalists remain objective and neutral and impartial, or is it impossible to do that in this day and age?
You know, when I first became a journalist some 36, 37 years ago, Ian, I mean, I think you know that I became a journalist with no undergraduate degree. I was way too stupid to become a lawyer, which is really what I wanted to do when I went to university. I wanted to become a lawyer and find a husband, and I failed badly at both. So I wanted to be a criminal litigator, and because I didn't kind of make the cut there, I became a crime reporter, which was like the second best. And mm-hmm. I went into journalism with this absolute passion and this belief that journalists were going to be these objective creatures, and we were going to be the voice of the voiceless. Mm-hmm. And the reality is what happens. I mean, we are all colored by our own environments. We're all colored by our own, you know, our own experiences. I mean, I've always been a card-carrying member of euthanasia. Yeah. I've always thought, religiously or not, that somebody has the right, if they are suffering, they have the right to make the choice that they want their suffering to end. It's an entirely different situation, Ian, when I faced the death of my beloved parents, who were both on life support, and they both died within 9 months of each other. So the reality is no journalist, it can be objective. What you want, what you ask for a journalist is you ask for a balanced viewpoint, even if that viewpoint doesn't fall in your favor. So you're asking for a journalist to give you, you know, or for you as a reader, a viewer, a listener, to hear all the viewpoints. And that's essentially what you want. But objectivity doesn't exist. And of course, the social media space, the fourth industrial revolution, the information revolution, has made everybody with a device a journalist. And I think that's made the job of a journalist that much more difficult. I know that information is out there that hasn't been substantiated, hasn't been fact-checked. There are so many so-called armchair experts sounding out about COVID-19 or any other issue that, you know, it has developed this really ugly animal of fake news. So when something is put out there in the social media space or wherever about what the trajectory of the virus or what's going to happen in level 3 or level 2, you've got to go and fact check it, because you actually don't know from one day to the next what is true and what isn't.
Absolutely. And I think, Janine, that's the problem. And we used to hear in the markets where people said you don't act on fact, you act on speculation, or you act on what you hear, perception. And then that's unfortunately what people are doing. Janine, turning back to business, and we know that's a big challenge that everybody's having now. And it's that kind of crossroads we're at, and I spoke about it a week ago, where I spoke about lives, saving lives or livelihoods, and the whole concept now where society is pushing hard against the government or the powers that be to let us go back to work, and then on the other hand you've got the medical professionals and all of that saying, whoa, you got to just be careful, because once the horse is bolted, you ain't going to close it. It's going to be very difficult to contain it. From your clients' perspectives, how have your clients' needs changed, and what are their main challenges now? And I'm specifically talking about businesses trying to get back to work, trying to communicate with their employees. And what are some of your suggestions for leaders, I would say, that are struggling to, and managers that are struggling to talk to their teams?
Well, I think that's exactly the space that I'm working right now in, Ian, and that is assisting people. You know, we're in phase level 4 of lockdown. Who knows if we're going to go back to level 5 or what the story is. But there have been organizations that have been working from day one, working at obviously a much more scaled down capacity. There are other big brands who are slowly scaling up operations. So, of course, the issue here is not so much about the external messaging, but the internal messaging. So how do you communicate to your staff who are on site, how do you make sure that the health and safety protocols are in place, that you've got risk mitigating procedures in place, that everybody's safe? Because of course your employees come first. They are the cogs in the machinery that drives your business. So what I'm doing now is I'm landing messages around communicating COVID-19. So, you know, whether I'm working with managers or CEOs or other C-suite executives, people in small businesses, etc., it is how do we get the message out there that some of us need to be on site and that it is a risk. And some of us are spending hours, like myself, in front of a screen, doing so many hours of overtime, getting an aching back. I don't know about you, but my thighs lock. And you know, how are we factored into this equation? The people who are working remotely, are we appreciated? Are we part of the team? And then of course there's that other whole dynamic of people getting, I have a bank client, a major bank, where literally people are going from one team's meeting to the next team's meeting. And I've said to the leaders that be, when does the work get done? You know, if you have a daily check-in at 8 o'clock and you're running meetings every hour on the hour, when do you expect people to become productive? So there's so many issues that we need to consider now that were never part of the equation during the I don't know if it was a real world, well, during the world that was.
Yeah, and I guess that's something that everybody's so sick and tired of us talking about, the new normal and this whole kind of all this new jargon that's coming out. One thing I want to ask you, Janine, about leadership and leadership styles. Do you see an emergence now of a more culture driven or a more compassionate leader coming out, or do you think it's still going to be like that wartime where we're in a crisis and everybody needs to go into crisis mode? And I'm not saying feelings are not important, but the focus needs to be on saving the business. Or do you see because everybody's caught up in COVID-19, that the compassionate leader may emerge?
I'll tell you what, and it's a great question, and thanks for asking it, and I'm going to give it some thought. And the way I'd respond to that is I'm seeing compassion on the part of big businesses, big corporates, big blue-chip companies who can afford it. I'm not seeing the same levels of compassion from the smaller businesses. I'm a small business, and, you know, I'm an SMME. So the smaller businesses are really – They are flying with their faces in the wind. You know, there's very little government support. And unfortunately, smaller businesses are having to lay off their employees left, right, and center. And what they're trying to do is they're just battling to keep their heads above water. So I don't know if compassion is part of the equation. I think people are really struggling if they are smaller players.
Taking a lunch break with us. I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Janine Lazarus. I'm certainly fascinated by the different angles in that. And we're going to shift gears a little bit, and we're going to focus specifically on the first question I asked Janine, which was about, is there such a thing as over-communicating? And then the second thing we're going to focus on is taking a look at what is Janine's view on some of the leaders out there that we're seeing, and who's really communicating well and who's really communicating badly. So Janine, tell us, is there such a thing as over-communicating?
Absolutely. I mean, nobody's interested, let's be honest, Ian, in everything we've got to say and everything we think about and everything that we dream about. And especially in the society of information overload, we're drowning in a glut of information. We are almost like a sponge that is incapable of absorbing any more information. I don't know about you, but at the end of a remote training day, you know, all I want to do is crawl under the covers. And that's after a quick workout and with the animals jumping all over my back while I'm working out on the lounge carpet. But yeah, I mean, you know, how do you know you're a great communicator? Well, there are two ways. One is when you land your message, the person who's consuming the message, the end user, the person you're communicating to, has got to get it. So how you know you're a really great communicator is if your message lands and your audience understands you. If your audience doesn't understand you, you are lousy. Your communication skills suck. So what you need to do is you need to communicate in much shorter sound bites. You know what a sound that is. A soundbite to your listeners is you need to chunk your information. So information chunk, almost cut up the apple or cut up the potato, the message as it were, in small slices or in small chunks, and allow people to consume your message that particular way. So it's no point getting involved in the jargon of business or the jargon of a state-owned entity or a parastatal or whatever it is. Try your best, or a government department, try your best to communicate in as short and as succinct methodology, if you like, as possible so that your messages land. Get in, land your messages, and get out. That really is the art of communication. Cause Ian, ultimately being simple is really, really sexy.
Yeah. And I think that's what's lacking is that we tend to get caught up in, as you say, being distracted or diverting away from the core message. And then you walk away and you go, well, what did I learn out of this? And I think one of the angles, and I'm going to lead in on one, and then I'll let you shoot with your leader's messages. But I think the one, and perhaps it's because I'm closely linked to it because I've got kids at school, but all the discussions around education and the education ministry and the to-ing and fro-ing and are we going back to school? Aren't we going back to school? I'm more confused than I was. And I actually want to put my head under the pillow when they start talking about it is because there's just so much stuff that's thrown up in the air. And nothing decisive. And I find that that's just, it's almost like you're talking for the sake of talking rather than giving a clear message. So Janine, over to you. Tell us some of the, cause you must watch, the news streams and you must watch these interviews and all of that. Who's doing well and who's doing badly?
Okay, so from a local, let's look at local businesses or local organizations. First of all, I mean, you know, we've had, I've got to talk about our president. Yeah. I was so impressed. I was so proud to be a South African when President Cyril Ramaphosa addressed the nation right at the beginning of lockdown. Mm-hmm. I just thought he was statesmanlike. I thought he was presidential. I thought he was on top of his message. And I was so glad that his predecessor was nowhere to be seen. I was mm-hmm. happy again when the president addressed us. We weren't happy with the contents of his presentation, but I felt informed. The fact that he has gone AWOL, you know, absence without leave, if you like, over the last 3 weeks for me paints an incredibly negative picture. Right now, the citizenry needs to be informed. We need to do what to do. We need to know what to do next. We need to know the way forward. You know, not in any crisis, the first thing that you've got to do is you've got to inform your target publics. Even if you don't throw everything and the kitchen sink at them, it's too much for them to comprehend, to absorb, to process. You need to communicate. They put you in power, so you need to be able to communicate with them so they can make decisions and they can ascertain the way forward. So for me, our president is a big letdown right now. Mm-hmm. We've seen Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma come up with her, you know, her banning of cigarettes. And I mean, that's an entirely different debate. You know, I'm not a smoker. I know my dad died of emphysema. I'm the last one to promote smoking, but I also know that economically, you know, cigarettes drive revenue. Cigarettes, alcohol bring revenue into this country. So for me, our government right now is not talking and walking in step. And we saw it during Marikana. We've seen it during so many crises where you've got during Marikana, our former president was out of the country. We had our head of police, Ria Piecha, saying that she was not sorry. And 3 days later, when Jacob Zuma jetted in, he said, we are sorry. So those are just some examples from a political perspective. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't
Yeah, sorry, I was going to say, I don't think he's got the easiest job in the world, and I don't think anybody's lining up to take it. But just ask you a question on that. Apparently, he's going to be speaking to us tomorrow evening. I think. I don't know if it's a rumor. It might be fake news that he's going to speak to us. But irrespective, if he is going to speak to us, I guess the first thing is, what would you be telling him to say? What does he need to say to bring us back or bring his credibility back? And the second part of that question, Janine, is he the one that should be leading the charge and being the voice or the communicator instead of letting his ministers talk and make him look? Because I think that, go for
no,
it.
Go. Sorry, I mean, this is exactly, I get so passionate about this. You can't send your minister to speak when you are leader of the state. The same way when a CEO is facing a big crisis, he sends his communications team to the slaughter like a lamb. No, we want to hear from the big cheese. We want to hear from the pilot. We want to hear from the captain of the ship. We want to hear from our president who we voted and put into power. How I'd advise him? No, I wouldn't like his job. I'd love to be his advisor. I'm not going to get that job, unfortunately. What I want to know is when he's going to switch on the economy. I want to know that the people that he's looking after, and I understand Ubuntu and I embrace it and it's part of my DNA. I'm a South African. But at the end of the day, it's a really tough balance. As I said, for the third time, I wouldn't like his job. But at the end of the day, you are balancing humanity with the economy. We've got to, at some point, start phasing in an economic recovery. We're not like any other country that I know of. I mean, there are some other examples. But we are drowning in a recession. We're sitting in the middle of junk status. If the economy doesn't switch on somehow, we all adopt social distancing principles, et cetera, et cetera. We've got to start turning the country back on. Because if we stay where we are, I don't know. I don't know where we're going to be in the next 6 months.
And I think we need to eliminate this confusion that everybody's sitting in, whether we opening up or we're not opening up and being careful. Let's look a little bit global, Janine. How have the rest of the world been handling it?
When I wrote to you last night, I mean, people laugh. I call him Captain Orange.
I don't think we need to explain who that is.
the man with a phenomenally, I don't know what hairspray he uses, but the US president who every time he opens up his mouth, it's a disaster. I mean, every time he says something, I use it as a media training clip because I'm always amazed by how he's such a balderdash. He just talks such nonsense. And I mean, I guess to an extent, Boris Johnson too, but I find Trump very difficult to swallow. And yet, you know what's quite interesting? He'll probably be voted back in by the Bible Belt, Middle America. Who knows?
Yeah.
But every time he says something, I mean, look at that statement he made about, what was it, bleach? And there were Americans, I mean, I don't know if these people have one brain cell left, but there were Americans who went and injected themselves with bleach. I mean, you know, where were you sleeping under a rock for the last century? So, yes, I mean, from an international point of view, definitely, I mean, how not to communicate. But you know what, Ian? I don't think he gives a damn. He's got so much money, he doesn't care what you or anybody else thinks.
Absolutely. So he's like really not worried what the world thinks. He's just concerned about himself. Janine, just before we wrap up, we could speak for hours, and I'm only given an hour, so maybe I'll have to ask Kathy if she'll give me another hour to chat to you. It's been wonderful, but I wanted to ask you, Janine, just in closing, that we've now seen the opportunity for everybody, each individual now, to kind of step up. You're a media training person, and as I've mentioned, I was blessed and I had the opportunity, it makes me feel old, and back in 2013 to be trained by you. And you definitely lived up to your reputation of being a news hound. But the best thing that I gained out of that was to be prepared and to learn the skill and practice. And I want to just circle back to that whole concept about introverts and extroverts and all of that, is that for the foreseeable future, Zoom and Teams and Skype and all of this is going to become a part of our lives. And there are people that are not comfortable on camera. They're not comfortable speaking to a screen. What advice would you give people to start that journey of building self-confidence and starting to understand that you need to practice. You can't just jump onto a screen and do a presentation.
Well, you're giving me a great opportunity to punt my business, Ian, and I'm certainly not going to let that slide by. They need to come to me because I work with such introverts. I work with people who decide to switch off their videos. I mean, how on earth am I supposed to train them on public speaking and presentation skills when I can't see them? So they have to turn on their videos. We understand it's in a home space. We're going to see wives coming into bring their husbands coffee in these micro nighties. We're going to see children pulling at their mothers. We're going to see you. I'm surprised he hasn't pitched up yet. One of my cats jumping all over the screen and becoming, you know, front and center. It's what we're going to see, but it's just having the confidence. You know, there's so much authenticity in face-to-face communication. And what we all need to learn, and I know I'm a tough talker and a straight shooter, but we need to embrace our authenticity. And if our authenticity is more quieter and less bulldozer like me, that's fine. And that's what we embrace and that's what we use and that's what we encourage and that's what we work with. We are all authentic individuals. We all have strengths. We all have challenges. And it's just an opportunity to stand up and be heard. And that, I think, is more to the point. It's not so much about not turning the camera off. It's about people, they don't know, for the main part, how to be heard. So it's not just a question of working on what they like as presenters and their body language and their vocal usage and how they should dress. It's also, are they heard? Are they taken seriously? Are they valued?
Janine, that's an absolutely awesome way to end this interview. Thank you so much. If listeners do want to get hold of you, what is the best way to reach out to you?
I have a website, janine@janinemedia.co.za. I don't know if I should give my cell number on air. Can I?
You can, but what we'll do is I'll post it. How's that? Because many people won't take it. I'll post your websites and all your handles, and I'll also post a link to this podcast once it's available. Janine, I just want to thank you so much. I'm not going to delve into your culinary expertise. We'll use that for the next interview. And please God, the next time we chat, we'll be talking about your awesome book that you're writing. Janine, thank you so much for spending the time with us today on the Lunch Bite, and take care during this time.
And you too. Stay safe. Thank you so much, Ian.